Hey Revision, how's it going? You guys may have guessed, because there wasn't a glare coming off the back of my giant bald head during worship, that I am not there today. I'm actually speaking at one of our partner churches named City Point, which started 1 week after Revision did 4 years ago in the booming metropolis of Washington, Iowa. But they're doing killer things in the southeastern region of our state. I'm excited to be there, but I'm even more excited for you guys because today, Revision is blessed with the opportunity to hear from my friend, Jody Weissman. Jody has been around Revision for a couple months now. If you haven't met her yet, you should. She's an incredible person with an incredible story. We're in the middle of the series Beyond Me, talking about how we can live the lives of impact that God created us for. And Jody's life exemplifies Beyond Me living. I'm so excited for her to come share a little bit of her heart, a little bit of her story, and a little bit of inspiration with all of us for how we can live beyond ourselves and make the kind of impact in this world God knit every single one of us together to make. So would you put your hands together right now and give Jody a warm Revision welcome.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. I'll be here all weekend. Here all weekend. Sorry, I didn't organize my notes from last time. Okay, so as Mike said, I'm filling in today. My name is Jody Weissman. I was so fortunate to speak at an event in early September where a lot of women from this church were at that service. And so I got to sit with, I don't know if you guys know Kiana, she's Grant's wife, little vivacious, little, oh my gosh. Yes, Grant, she is a cutie. So I sat with that girl and I loved her personality and we just instantly started talking and stuff. So she said to me, well, oh, Jody, where have you been going to church? And I said, well, I have been church shopping for 2 years, which is just about as bad as bathing suit shopping, if you've ever done that before. It's very difficult and very tricky times. So anyway, she said to me, well, you should come to my church. It's super fun. And I was like, okay. So I came the first weekend, I pulled up front, and I liked that there was a little front row parking place for visitors, so I totally used that. So I pulled right in, came in, got some coffee, and everybody was so nice to me. And then I got a front row spot, but then I was like, okay, so I'm gonna see about this music, because music and worship to me light me on fire. Now, I can't carry a tune in a bucket, but I love to sing. And then Grant started singing, and the music you guys have here, super good. So then Mike came up. I'm like, all right, well, we're going to give this guy a try. So I don't know if you've ever been to a place where you feel like the pastor's like pointing at you while he's preaching. So here I am, the new girl in the front row, and I felt like I was kind of bobbing and weaving because I was like, does he know that he said everything that I needed to hear? And I got up and I thought, I've been in this church for about 52 minutes and I already feel at home. So I've only been here 7 weeks, you guys. So thank you for always being so friendly to me. I already feel at home. In 7 weeks, so thank you for that. I've attended another church for 20 years, and what I've just learned from these people here in Connections in 6 or 7 weeks has truly been a blessing to me. So thank you, Revision Church, for that. So real quick, I want you guys to know any of the scripture that I put up on the board today is gonna come from the Message Bible. Now, the Message Bible is just another version, NLT, NIV, but years back I was doing a Bible study of the Old Testament. Now, I don't know if you've ever been to the Old Testament, but it can be a little dry sometimes and a little hard. So the Message Bible, I felt, just wrote it out in such plain English that I could understand it. So everything that I'm preaching about today, it's gonna be from the Message Bible. So I wanted you to know that before we get started. So I am excited. We are just gonna jump straight into the new sermon series of what it is to live beyond ourselves. When I talked to Mike, he's like, I want our church to be, I wanna lead with radical generosity. And I want the church to know what that looks like. So that's what I'm gonna talk about today. What it looks like to live in that radical generosity. Because we live in a time of media and total bombardment at all the time. And so we live in a society that says, if you want it, get it. You can't afford it, charge it. You want to eat it, eat it. It doesn't matter. You deserve it. You're worth it. Do it. That's the society we live in. But that's not what the Bible calls us to live like, okay? So today, I'm going to go to my favorite scripture verse. I think last service I said every scripture verse was my favorite. Oh, I have so many favorites, I can't even pick. Okay, this is one of my favorites. I feel a little bit better about saying that. Okay, so Romans 4:16 says, this is why the fulfillment of God's promises depend entirely on trusting God and his way, then simply embracing him and what he does. God's promises arrive as a pure gift. Are you guys looking at your Bible and the promises from God as a gift to you? Because they are. They are God-breathed, Jesus-breathed words onto that page for you to open up, read them, and live by. And that is your gift from him. So please act as if it is, because it is an amazing gift for us to be able to read that. Now, it's our choice whether we're going to believe those promises or not, because in our humanness, we become very human sometimes and really mess things up. But it is to trust him and his promises. So last week, I loved that Mike broke into Abraham, the life of Abraham. Abraham, he had to go onto the mountain, and God told him to sacrifice his one and only son that he didn't have until he was like, what, 150 years old or whatever. But he said, we will come back, because him saying we, meaning me and my son, because I trust my Lord. So I'm going to go in straight into Romans 4:18. It says, when everything was hopeless, Abraham believed anyway, deciding not to live on the basis of what he saw he couldn't do, but on the basis of what God said he would do. And so he was made a father of a multitude of nations. So when God promised Abraham, you're going to be a father of nations. Well, that's kind of tricky because he wasn't even a dad yet. But he believed. He believed because God said. Then straight into Romans 4:19 to 21. He didn't tiptoe around God's promises, asking cautiously skeptical questions. Instead, he plunged in the promise and came up strong, ready for God, because he was sure that God would do good on what he promised to do. That's the same God, the God of Isaac, Abraham, and Jacob. That's our same God. Those promises are still for us to trust in those promises. I'm going to share with you guys what my Abraham moment in my life looked like. It had been 3 years ago, and I had was having some pain in the left side of my face, and I'd had this wisdom tooth that had been coming in crooked backwards, and so I had gone to the dentist and kind of had complained about the pain. So just a short synopsis, in the next 6 to 7 weeks of my life, ended up having my wisdom tooth pulled, 2 root canals, 2 crowns, and 25 shots in one nerve, okay? So in turn, you guys can imagine that damaged the nerve, okay? It's the trigeminal nerve that runs in your face to the base of your brain, okay? So after about 8 to 9 weeks of having all these procedures done, the pain that was inside my head was like nothing I had could imagine. The only way I can describe it to you guys is behind my temple, I felt like somebody was stabbing me with a screwdriver. Not constantly, but I would get jolts of pain. My eye would water and twitch. My teeth hurt. Every time I would walk, I would feel my heartbeat in my face. My eyeball hurt. My nose hurt. My teeth hurt. I didn't brush my teeth for 2 years, you guys, because the pain was so severe. So I had gone back to the endodontist who had done a lot of these procedures on me, and I had told him that the pain was so severe that I needed him to fix it. I said, you know what, I had a baby naturally. I've had my gallbladder out, I've had my appendix out, and I had a collapsed lung for 5 days and didn't even know it. So I'm a little bit of a stud muffin. So, but I'm gonna tell you right now, that pain inside my head, I cannot take it, and I need you to fix it. You're gonna fix this. So he says to me, I need to give you 2 more shots to eliminate what I think may be wrong. So he gives me 2 shots. And he comes back 10 minutes later, and I'm sitting there with hot tears because I am in horrible pain. And he shoots me a stack of paperwork, hands it to me, and says, well, there's nothing really else I can do for you. This is what I think you have. I need you to go to your family doctor. So the next day, I went to the family doctor. But before, I went down to my car, and I looked at the sheet of the paper. And this is what the sheet of paper, this was the first thing it said. He thought that I had been diagnosed with a rare, because, you know, if I'm going to do it, let's go big or go home, because I like to be one of a kind. It said, trigeminal neuralgia. It is a chronic pain condition that affects the trigeminal nerve, which carries sensations from the face to the base of the brain. Even a mild sensation, such as brushing teeth or putting makeup on, will send an electric jolt of pain, okay? It also says that it's, once diagnosed with this, that it has a 39% suicidal rate, because the pain is so severe. So I want you guys to know it wasn't just like, oh, I have a headache today. Like, it was pain. And like I said, I had a kid naturally, and it took me like 2 days. Like, I know pain. But this was like nothing. Yeah, you ladies are laughing, and the guys are like, what? Mm-hmm. So let's just say it was painful. And so at that moment, I'm like, okay, so I'm going to go to the doctor, and he's going to help me. So I go to the doctor, try meds for about 3 months. And if you guys don't know anything about nerve medication, what nerve medication does is it slowly shuts your nerves down, okay? So what it did to me is it made me shaky, it made me tired, lethargic, very head spinny, kind of stomach on the roller coaster type. So not only am I feeling all of that, I'm also still in horrible pain. So after 3 months with my family doctor, still no help, he finally says, well, I think you need to see a neurologist. So he gets me into a neurologist. So here I am. Okay, this neurologist, he's going to fix me. I can't wait. Guess what? 5 months of horrible meds, no fix. So I'm at the year mark. So not only am I on horrible medication that's making me sleep, feel dizzy, sick to my stomach. I am still in horrible pain. So after I'd seen my neurologist for the fifth time, and when I walked in, I went to talk to him, and he held his finger up to me to hush me. And I looked at him, and he's like, well, I'm not really gonna change your medication much, and yeah, I don't wanna see you too much. And then he just sweeps me out of the room. And I thought, I had put so much hope in that appointment because I'm seeing a neurologist and he's not fixing me. So I called him back and I pretty much told him that if he didn't help me, I was gonna be part of that 39% that was on that sheet of paper. So he got me into Mayo, and I waited 8 weeks. And I knew that I knew my answer was at Mayo. I mean, it's Mayo, right? So I had talked to the head of neurology and they said, well, to fix this condition, it is a brain surgery. They will shave the left side of your head and they will go into the base of your brain where that nerve begins and operate on it there. You do run a high risk of paralysis and drooping. And I didn't care because the pain was so severe, I did not care. So at that point, I'm so excited. I get up to Mayo and I'm gonna get fixed. Well, guess what? 45 minutes with the head of neurology, he looks at me and he's just like, oh, well, I think you've been misdiagnosed. And I said, so what does that mean? He says, well, that means I can't fix you. And so in that moment, I remember the air being sucked out of my lungs as if I had just literally lost my ability to breathe. And I will never forget what the floor of that office looked like, because I remember my husband holding on to me so tight, because in that moment, I'm like, are you kidding me, God? Like, I'm a good Christian. I have the bumper stickers. I have the t-shirts. I go to church. I teach classes. Like, how come you're not showing up in this moment? Like, aren't you a gracious, loving, merciful God? I was so mad. So he says to me, well, we're going to triple your medication in hopes that your nerve heals. And all I could think about was how crappy I felt on the meds. I couldn't imagine tripling it. So I went home the next day, and I started tripling my medication. So for 3 weeks, I stayed at home. I couldn't even drive because the medication made me so sick to my stomach. It was the worst roller coaster ride that I couldn't get off of. So I stayed home for 3 weeks, and at the three-week mark, I am still in horrible, throbbing, bursting pain in my face, and I am on the worst medication of my life, and I just figured I just couldn't live that way. I wasn't living. I felt like I was barely existing. And so that night, I remember telling everybody goodnight because I knew the next day I was going to take matters into my own hands because I could no longer live this. I could not believe this was the life that God had wanted me to live. And I was so mad, and I was going to take matters into my own hands. And so I woke up the next morning and I walked down about two stairs and I stopped dead in my track. Because I have to let you guys know, when I mean pain, I lived at a solid 8 or 9 all the time. So I started to walk down that stair, and by the time I hit that second or third stair, my pain level was like at a 7. And I'm gonna tell you, I thought the gates of heaven had opened up. Because to be able to have even a number or two of break in pain, to think I might be able to deal with this. I walked down the rest of the 15 stairs, got into the kitchen, and I remember that I was able to move my head and not feel like I was going to fall over. And I know for me, in that moment, God showed up and said, you can trust me, Jody. Trust me with your, trust me like Abraham trusted me. And in that moment, thank you, God, that he saved me from myself, because I would have done something that was, God was not calling me to do, that was not holy. And he saved me from myself in that exact moment. And for that, I am so eternally grateful that he showed up. And when he showed up for me that day, I quit asking so many cautiously skeptical questions of, why me? How come I'm not healed? This isn't fair. And started to completely trust. I knew my Bible, and I started to believe the promises that God had for me. And I know that he's told me, he says, Jody, I am your redeemer. I am your great counselor. I am your ever-present help in a time of need. And ultimately, I am your healer. Trust me in that to heal you. And I'm going to tell you, he healed me in ways that I didn't even know I was broken, because that's the power of the God that we serve. So the crazy thing is, my devotion that morning, I sat down and was so overwhelmed that there was a break in pain. I didn't feel so, like I could walk a straight line. It felt amazing. My devotion that morning says, it was Jeremiah 31:3. It says, I've loved you with an everlasting love, and I've drawn you to myself with a loving kindness. And it became so personal to me that morning. And I put my name in that. And he says, I've loved you, Jody, with an everlasting love. And I pictured his arm
pulling me in with my loving kindness. He never left me. He never abandoned me. I was the one that moved from him because he didn't answer me in the way that I wanted answers, when I wanted them, and how I wanted to be healed. He healed me from things, like I said, that I didn't even know were broken in my life through this. So he is and will always be, I was the one that moved from him. I finally realized at that point that I must trust God totally and to understand the magnitude of his love for me, to learn that his love will transcend both good and bad circumstance of our life. I came fully aware that I am a loved child of God. No matter my pain, no matter how bad life can be, I'm a loved child of God. And that his love for us is perfectly, totally, and eternally. And for that reason, I trust him with my life. And I can live above my pain, and I can love above my circumstances. So I say last March, you guys, I was able, my medication was actually almost quadrupled by the time I did it. But last March, I'm fully med-free right now. So now I'm not completely healed. I still have pain in my face. And I have it, I just, in between services, I had to go take 3 Advil because it was throbbing a little bit. But the pain I have now, you know what? When it throbs, it's a reminder to me, do you trust me, Jody? And I say, yes, Lord, I do. Because he got me through it before, and he's going to continue to get me through it. So I'm not completely healed, but it's a reminder for me that I will trust him and trust his character because he is a loving, amazing God. Okay, so we're going to jump into the second way to lead with radical generosity as a church. What does it look like to be the church today? I think that's a question because a lot of people don't understand that. So I'm going to go straight to my Romans 1:6. Through him we receive both the generous gift of life and the urgent task of passing it on to others who have received it by entering into obedient trust in Jesus. So there's that word trust again, guys, to trust in Jesus. So how are we passing it on? What is it? How are we being the church? Not here. How are we taking this and going out there? What does it look like? That's why the second Sunday I ever came here was fifth Sunday, and we were to volunteer. And I thought I was supposed to go somewhere else, but then I didn't have rain boots and it was raining, so I came here instead. And I sat around a table with people I didn't know for 2 hours. I have attended another church for 20 years, and I'm going to tell you, in those 2 hours, I met more people. I met a boy named Garth tell me about his wife. I met this woman with her beautiful babies, Evelette and Bella, sweet little babies. Met a girl named Kathy. Like, in those 2 hours, I sat there and knew more about these people at this table than I had in 20 years. And I left here, I'm like, that's my church. Because we here on that fifth Sunday, we are out being the church. The hands and feet of Jesus Christ is what we're called to do. And that's what you guys do here. And I absolutely love it. I love it. Because people watch us. They act how we serve. They watch us. Now, are we going to tell them, oh, I'm a Christian, I do this? No, they're going to watch how you live your life. They're going to watch how you treat people. And then they're going to watch. And then they're going to ask. So being the church today, you guys, is simply to me the word love. We're supposed to love. God so loved the world that he gave us his only begotten son. God so, therefore we. That's what we're supposed to do. So I'm going to go, you guys, John 4 is one of my favorites. So I'm going to tell you about the woman at the well, okay, the Samaritan woman. I don't know if you guys know this story or not, but I love it because it's a story of love. So in Samaria, to the north was Galilee, to the south was Judea, and then it was the Mediterranean Sea, I think, and the Jordan River. So to get around Samaria, you'd have to get into the water. People would avoid Samaria at all costs because Samaria was the trash of the trash. They were harlots in interracial marriage and interreligious. It was, back in the day, it was trash city. People would avoid it at all costs. But what did Jesus do? Oh, I'm going right in. Because that's Jesus. He wants to give a message of love. So back in the day, of course, no indoor plumbing, no water. So the women of the house in the morning and the evening would go fetch water. So it was kind of funny that there was a woman at the well in the middle of the day. So obviously this woman must have thought maybe she didn't fit in with the morning and the evening crowd. So she came in the afternoon by herself. It was also custom of the day that men wouldn't speak with women. They would only speak with to them through their husband. Okay. So here's Jesus marches straight through, finds a woman, a colorful woman, let's say, of the night, right at the well. And so what does he do? First thing he does is he sees her, goes straight up to her, and asks her for a drink of water. The Samaritan woman, taken back, asks, how come you, a Jew, are asking me, a Samaritan woman, for a drink of water? And Jesus said, if you knew the generosity of God and who I am, you would be asking me for the drink of water, and I would give you a fresh living water. The woman said, sir, you don't even got a bucket to draw with. And this well here, it's deep. So how do you think you're going to get this living water? Like, I love her sarcasm here, because she's like, all right, so you're this Jesus guy. Mm-hmm, I see who you are. And you see how, well, this deep's really well, and you even got a bucket. So let me see what you're going to do, right? So Jesus says to her, everyone who drinks from this well will get thirsty over and over again. But the water that I give, if you drink it, you will never thirst. The water I give is an artesian spring within. It is a gushing fountain of endless life. Jesus is telling her, sweet baby, I am eternal life. You believe in me, I will feed and water your soul forever, and you will never thirst again. So this woman says, sir, will you give me this water so I don't get thirsty and have to keep coming back down to this well again? And Jesus says, go call on your husband and come back with him. And she looks at him and says, well, I don't have a husband. And she he says to her, well, that's nicely put, because you have five husbands, and the man you're living with right now is not your husband. Jesus told her, it's who you are and the way that you live that counts before God. It's your worship must engage your spirit in the pursuit of truth. The kind of people that the Father is out looking for are those who are simply honest themselves before him. Those who worship him must do it out of their being and spirit, and their true selves in humble adoration. So this woman, are you guys ready for this? This woman, I love this part. Well, I don't know about that, but you know, the Messiah's coming, and so when he gets here, I'm gonna ask him about it. Girl was missing it. Like, Jesus is right in front of her, saying, please drink the water I give. You don't need that water. Oh, sweet lady was missing it. So Jesus says, I am him. You wait no longer. Just then the disciples came back, couldn't believe that Jesus was talking to such a woman. And just then she ran back into the village, but then told everybody about the man who knew her inside and out. So how many times do we have that Jesus moment? Is he standing right in front of us and we don't seize the moment because we're staring at our phone, or we're staring at a screen, or we're wrapped up in a game or Netflix, when a moment is right in front of you and we don't see it? Jesus is knocking open the door, people. He's right there. Jesus crossed so many boundaries to get to this woman, went into a country that was considered trash, but he knew there was one woman he could save, and he went in anyway. So are we crossing boundaries to love people like that? Because that's what we're called to do, because that's the crazy kind of love that God gives us. Are we going to cross those boundaries, you guys? We should. God so loved us, therefore we fill in the blank. That's what we're called to do. So number three, if we're going to be a church that leads with radical generosity, we are called to serve. We're called in service, you guys. Romans 12:11 says, never be lacking in zeal, but keep your spiritual fervor for serving the Lord. I just like that word fervor. I don't think we use it much in the English language anymore, your fervor. How's your fervor, guys? Like, do you have fervor? Like, are you on fire? What is your service? We're all called to serve. We all have to serve. And all of our service looks different. But guess what? It's not about you. I know you think that it is, but it's not about you. Because Jesus did love us first. Therefore, we're called to serve. So what does it look like when we're serving? How are you serving God at home, at work, in those moments? I remember the first time I heard the saying, you must die to yourself and take up the cross. I was like, I don't even get what that means. What that means is when you deny yourself something for the betterment of someone else, when you give up your time, your space, your money, your energy, when somebody else needs it. That's what it is, to deny yourself and to serve somebody else, because that's what Jesus ultimately did for us. I think about the night that before Jesus died, they said that he was in the Garden of Gethsemane, and he was praying so fervently that his sweat turned to blood. And he says to God, his Father, please take this cup from me. I don't want to do this. But guess what? God didn't answer him, and Jesus did it anyway. He took up the cross for us, and that's what we're called to do. I had my take up my cross moment. I had 8 years ago, my sweet mother-in-law, and most of the time when you say mother-in-law, people don't put sweet in front of that name. Fill in the blank for your individualness. My mother-in-law was a sweet little, she was 4'11". She was American Indian and Italian, and she was a pistol, that little one. She was a firecracker. But she was amazing. She loved me like a daughter. She was good to my kids. She never told me what to, she loved me with a Christ-like love. She did. She was so amazing. So 8 years ago, we get a diagnosis that she has multiple myeloma, which is a blood and bone cancer, which is incurable. So the next 2 years, we slowly watched cancer eat her from us. And I remember in the last couple days, weeks, months of her life, I had to step more into a caring role. Now, the last, I would say, 3 to 5 days, I really had to step into more of a caring role that, of course, was not my choice. I remember we came home on a Sunday night, and my husband had said to me, well, Mom's wishes are that she wants to die at home. And I said, okay, and he says, so I need you to help. And I'm like, I can make a tuna noodle casserole. Like, I can, I'm good at food. What do you mean I'm, he says, no, I need you to step into this role for her. And I'm like, no, like, my, this is my jam. Like, no, that's not my service. And I remember I went to bed that night and I was like, how could you? Like, you guys had a meeting, then decided that I would do what? And didn't even ask me about it and then told me? I was so mad. I was mad at my husband. I was mad at her. I was mad at God. And that night I couldn't sleep and I was tossing and turning. I was yelling at God and he yelled back. And he's like, do you love me? I'm like, of course I love you, God. He says, then you do this. You do this for me. I'm calling you. I am calling you into service. If I call you to serve, I'm not going to be like, okay, serve, boom. No, I'm going to call you, and then I'm going to equip you. And then when you do it for me, I will bless you. So in that moment, I did not feel like a hospice nurse. And there were times that it was very hard. But the last day of her life, I got the pleasure of kneeling beside her bed and whispering in her ear. I cited the 23rd Psalm to her. And I know that the last words she heard of my breath in her ear was that I would dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life. And I got the blessing of that moment, and she passed hours later. And it wasn't until years of healing my heart from that did I realize that I was able to love Mom with a sacrificial Christ-like love. Because I was able to be with her in a moment where others couldn't be, and he equipped me to do that. Now, it was raw and messy and dirty, but that moment he blessed me with is something I hold so deep in my heart, because I got to follow what God called me to do, give my mother-in-law her dying wish, and help my husband do something that he couldn't do for him, for his mother himself. I was called to do it, and God equipped me to do it. And in that moment, I learned what it was to die to self for the betterment of another. And it was an amazing, amazing gift. I'm going to go straight into Ephesians 5:2. Observe how Christ loved us. His love was not cautious, but it was extravagant. His love, he didn't love in order to get something from us, but to give us everything of himself. Are you loving like that? Love like that. Do you love with caution? Are you skeptical? Or are you loving extravagantly? Because we're called to love extravagantly. We are called, you guys, love isn't easy. We are called to love the lovely and the unlovely. Like, it's easy to love you guys. Like, you're here wanting to listen to me. What about all the people that don't want to listen to me? You know what I mean? It's like, you've been to Walmart before, standing in line? Yep. We're to love all those people. Next time you're in Walmart, I just want you to pause and look around and think about how God, all children of God, we're called to love the lovely and the unlovely. That's what we're called to do. Love isn't judgment with strings attached. It's a pure service of not wanting anything in return. That's how we're supposed to love. Okay, number four, you guys, what does your service look like? Everybody's service is so different. God has made us all different. I mean, think if everybody was like me. There would be a lot of talking and not a lot of listening, right? Thank God not everybody's like me, right? Right? So like, okay, so my best girlfriend, Julie, right? I call her Juge. She is a quiet, keep to herself, not super outgoing, sweet-hearted little lady. Yep, and she's my best girl. So we are so opposite, right? Okay, so this is what happens. I call her and be like, Juge, guess what? I got another talking engagement. Yep, this time it's like 300 people. And she's like, oh, barf. Because that's not her service. She literally says, oh, girl, barf. Because that's not her service. If I am in person with her and I tell her about a speaking engagement, her neck gets red. Like, she can't even fathom getting up in front of people, right? People's like, somebody want to speak? I'm like, God makes us all so different, you guys. Her call, she has a love for animals that blows my mind. Her love and time and energy. Oh, I've been to dinner reservations at 8 o'clock. We didn't get there till 9:30 because, you know what, we saw a stray cat in the back of a dumpster that we had to go find. Okay? I don't understand that heart. I don't want to get in a dumpster with these heels on to rescue a cat that I don't know. I'm good. That's her service. This is me. Not everybody wants to get up here and talk. Me, I love it. We all have a different service, you guys. We are all called to do something different. That's how it is. If you don't know what it is, I encourage you to ask God, reveal to me what is Lord. What lights me on fire? What am I passionate about? One of the things I love, you guys, I'm going to show you. This is my jam. I have a Jesus keychain. It's a flashlight. Okay? This Jesus keychain is for me, like it has all the fobs on it, which I took off because I knew it was going to make a lot of noise. But you go somewhere and they want your little thing and they scan it or whatever. So every time I take my keys out, I got me some Jesus. So I was at getting my oil changed one day and I pulled in and the guy looked at me. And he's like, all right, ma'am, can we have your keys? And I was like, hold up, Jordan. I got me a new Jesus flashlight. So I need you to be real careful when you're touching Jesus, if you could, please. And so he looks at me and he laughs and he grabs. He's like, ow, it's burning me. And I'm like, oh, are you a sinner? And he looks at me, he goes, aren't we all? And I'm like, yes. So now every time I pull in to get my oil changed, they're like, oh snap, it's a Jesus lady. Jesus lady's coming in. And then they all fight over my keychain because they want the Jesus flashlight. Lamp unto my feet, light unto your path. Yep, Jesus flashlight. Because God has made me bold and crazy. I love whipping my Jesus flashlight out and people are like, what is that? And I was like, oh snap, you need some Jesus? But that's me, that's my service. When you find out what your service is, take it and serve the Lord. So we're gonna go to my most favorite picture right now. This was a gift given to me by my sweet, sweet friend because she knows one of my favorite verses is Matthew 5:13-16. This is what we're called. We are called to be a salt shaker and a light bulb. We are to be salt and light of the earth is what we're called. It's hard for me to say salt shaker and not be like a salt shaker. Because like when you shake salt, like it goes everywhere. That's what we're called to do. So I mean, if you're in Walmart and you're going like this and somebody was at the service, they're gonna know. Oh, they just came from revision. No, I'm just kidding. Anyway, so I can't even say it without doing it. Salt shaker, salt and light. Matthew 5:13-16. Let me tell you why you are here. You're here to be the salt seasoning that brings out the God flavors in the earth. Because God's up in heaven with Jesus, but we're here. So it's our job as believers to bring out the God flavors of the earth. If you lose your saltiness, how will people taste godliness? You will have then lost your usefulness and will end up in the garbage. See, this is why I like the message, plain as day. Do what you're supposed to do, don't end up in the garbage, right? Here's another way to put it. You're here to be light, bringing out the God colors of the world. God's not a secret to be kept. We're going as public with this, as public as a city on a hill. If I make you light bearers, you don't think that I'm gonna hide you under a bucket, do I? Nope. I'm putting you on a light stand. So now that I've put you there on a hilltop, on a light stand, shine and shine bright. Keep an open house, be generous with your lives. Be open to others. You'll prompt people to open up to this generous Father in heaven. So, revision, if we are going to be a radically generous church, we have to trust God and his promises and know that they're for us, know that he is our redeemer and our counselor. We need to know what it looks like to be the church, which is ultimately to love. Therefore, God loved us, therefore serve, therefore love. Know that you are called in service, that there are times that you will have to deny yourself for the betterment of others. But again, that is a Christ-like love. And ultimately, to know what your service is, and my service is to be a salt shaker. You guys, so let your light shine. Wherever you go, be a salt shaker. Because when you shake salt, you know what salt does? Salt literally makes people thirsty. So if you are out in this world and you're shaking your salt shaker, people are gonna get thirsty and then they're gonna ask you. And when they ask you, you lead them to the well. And you tell them about Jesus, the promise of that artisan spring within, the gushing fountains of endless, who doesn't want endless life? So go out and shake that salt and then spread that message because Jesus promises that he will feed and water our souls for eternity. Would you pray with me? Heavenly Lord, I thank you so much for this day and for the message. I pray that we have open hearts and open minds to know that we are a loved child of God, that we can live above our circumstances and know that we are called into obedient service to give you glory and honor for all that you have given us every day of our lives, Lord. And we thank you for that in your most precious and sweet name. Amen.